90 WJNO, West Palm Beach.
From the Club Raymond Motor Cars Studio, you're listening to News Radio 1290 WJNO, an iHeartRadio station.
The thoughts and opinions expressed are those of the sponsors and don't necessarily reflect those of this station or iHeartMedia.
This is the Family Center for Recovery show. Join us now to learn ways to begin the path to recovery. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers don't. Learn more at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Well, and here we are, Sunday afternoon. I hope the sun is shining wherever you may be on your Sunday. And here we are for the Family Center for Recovery show. Your host, Peter Nathan, with me today in the studio, a very special guest. We have in the studio today Dr. Robert A. Moran. Dr. Moran is the owner, medical director, and CEO of Family Center for Recovery. Welcome to the show, Doctor.
It is really great to be here, Peter.
You know, there's a lot of really cool things that go on over at Family Center for Recovery. And recently, I think it was maybe about a year ago or so, that purchased a hotel and full renovation of it. You know, the thing that really struck me was the staff. There was the cleaning staff, people who did upkeep, everything like that. You kept them on, didn't you?
I certainly did, Peter. And actually, it was about 4 years ago that we first purchased the property. It took us a while to get it zoned properly and then had to have a lot of work done to get it set up so that we could provide the services we do. And I recognized that there were great housekeepers who were working at the hotel, which is what it used to be. And I asked them to stay on because I recognized really good workers.
I mean, that's heartwarming, and to know that you care in families and to that type of thing. I also know that as far as past guests that we've had on the show, members of the staff, and you've always said this to me. You said, you know, Peter, I couldn't do it on my own, and the staff that I have that helps me day in and day out. Could you maybe go over for our listeners a little bit about the staff and what they mean to you and how they're an integral part of your program there?
We have an incredible staff, Peter. You know, my staff will tell you that my standards are very high. I am very demanding. I insist upon high-quality work, high-quality care of our patients, and I have been able to put together a staff that I would put up against any facility in the country.
Yeah, one thing that's a testament, too, is looking at the length of period of time. I mean, you've had some staff members that have been with you for quite a while. Who comes to mind? It's like, and we don't want to leave anybody out, but I know that there's a lot of people over there. But there are certain people, yeah, they've been with you a while, and there's that allegiance. Who comes to mind when we think of who's been with you for a while?
Well, you know, one of the people who've been with me for the longest time is John Boyles. He's my director of facilities. He was right there when I first opened the initial program, didn't really know much about running a business, and he helped me tremendously.
And how did John find you? How did you find John?
Gosh, I think I put ads in the paper or perhaps online at that time. Looking for someone who could help me begin to put things together. You know, he had some history working as what we call coordinators, known as behavioral health technicians, in other facilities. And so he came to me and really sold himself.
Clinical director, Stacy Hodges. She's been with you for a while, and she takes care of so much over there. Could you maybe kind of go over for our listeners as far as Stacy Hodges and what her responsibilities are?
She's absolutely incredible. I am so blessed to have Stacy part of our staff. You know, providing high-quality work and overseeing her staff of therapists is her passion, and she does an incredible job doing it. She is our compliance officer. She ensures that we are always doing everything properly. You know, we are accredited by Joint Commission in addition to being licensed by the Department of Children and Families. And there are lots of very important requirements, and she certainly insists that every staff member in the facility is up to the task of maintaining those requirements and always really improving our performance in every department.
How did I find Dr. Moran in a treatment facility, Family Center for Recovery? Sean Wilcox. I was in classes at Palm Beach State College going through addiction studies, and that's how I first kind of tuned in to Dr. Moran's program over there. I know Sean's been with you a while, too. You mind going over Sean a little bit, his background, what he means to you?
He has. And, you know, Sean and I tell this funny story. He was actually hired by Donna Entwistle at the time. She was the person in his position, and that's the director of the coordinating staff. And Donna was very good at always choosing the best employees for her staff. And I had heard that this guy was working as a coordinator with my patients, and he was on a shift where we really didn't cross paths very much. And I heard that he was really questioning some of my practices. So I saw him one day at the facility, and I went up to him, and I said, "Sean, let me tell you something. I may not always be right. And if you have an opinion that differs from me, I want you to come to me and tell me right away so that we can talk about it." I think he thought I was going to fire him on the spot. But, of course, I respected the fact that he had a strong opinion and was willing to talk with me about it. We've been great friends ever since. He's presently the director of coordinating staff, and he does an incredible job as well.
That's so nice to hear. Other members of your staff, I know that you have Jorge and Zach. They are there, are in your office. Could you go over a little bit as far as their responsibilities and what they mean to you there?
My right-hand man, Jorge, is my executive assistant, but he does so much more. He actually keeps my professional life together. He ensures that all of my credentialing for my various board certifications are always intact. He coordinates all of our educational activities, particularly regarding having students come from around the country. We have affiliations with 6 medical schools and over 50 physician assistant schools around the country. So we have students coming from all over the place to learn psychiatry. In addition to third and fourth year medical students, we have second year physician assistant students, second year psychiatry residents, an occasional psychiatry fellow, an occasional addiction medicine fellow. So we really consider ourselves a teaching facility, and we have a wonderful opportunity to provide education to people from around the country.
I mean, that speaks volumes as far as the number of colleges and universities and staying up to date as far as the latest in treatments and programs that are out there. James Santamarina, Director of Admissions.
You know, before I get to James, Peter, I'm realizing that we skipped right over Zach. Can't forget Zach. My goodness. He oversees a number of different departments, including our finances. He's the guy in charge of collecting payments and paying bills, essentially. He oversees the director of facilities as well. He essentially is always there to support me when I'm trying to figure out solutions to problems. We're talking these things out. He is incredibly busy, but very well organized. And, you know, he likes to tell a story about when he first sought treatment for his recovery. And it's a very well-told story. I'll leave it to him to tell one day. But it really, he emphasizes how important it is to build character in recovery. And Zach certainly has a very healthy character, and he likes to share his messages with some of our patients and occasional staff members once in a while. And he's very obsessional in terms of being organized and getting things done. I don't think I could run the business without the help of Zach.
No, they are extremely devoted, very professional. James Santamarina, who's been a guest on our show, Director of Admissions.
An absolutely phenomenal employee. I'm very lucky to have James. You know, he's the director of our family services in addition to being the director of admissions, and he works tirelessly. He really understands the patients and the families, certainly upon admission. He understands the anxiety associated with coming into treatment. He works very closely with the families to be involved in our family program, and we can talk a bit about that a little later. He's always available to them. He helps support, because it's really difficult to understand a lot of the psychotherapeutic interventions that we provide when patients are first coming in, and it's important that the families are on board. And so James really serves as a liaison in order to help the families integrate into the overall treatment of their loved one.
Excellent. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Family Center for Recovery Show. Your host, Peter Nathan, with me today in the studio is Dr. Robert A. Moran. He is the owner, medical director, and CEO of Family Center for Recovery. We're talking about staff. We're talking about teamwork. We're talking about that it takes a team to do and provide treatment. Rachel. Rachel Spiller, she's been on the show before, and she's a primary therapist. Maybe we want to go a little bit over Rachel.
You know, Rachel started as a student, mental health intern student, actually, and she then became licensed as a therapist and has been working with us now for about 6 years. She is absolutely wonderful. She really is in charge of our adolescent program and does a great job with them. She has been open to learning from me over the years. Sometimes we actually butt heads, and it's a wonderful opportunity because she's sharing a perspective that I might not have at the moment, and we're always trying to do whatever we can in the best interest of her adolescent at the time. And so we have great stimulating discussions about treatment interventions that we should be providing.
Yeah, that's the thing that I really enjoy about being a part of Family Center for Recovery is that if somebody has an opinion, they're able to voice it, play devil's advocate, so to speak, which is enlightening to be in a workplace and be able to voice your opinions and your views and things along those lines. There are probably 60 to 65 employees, a lot of behind-the-scenes people that really make things work and take and do and things along those lines. We're going to be going to a short commercial break shortly, but just kind of preview as far as Dr. Moran's background. It's extensive, a lot of letters after his name. This was something I found very interesting. Dr. Moran, you were the first in your family to
graduate high school.
Wow. So first to graduate from high school, and then from high school, maybe if you could go over to our listeners, we're going to go to a break, we'll come back. But how did you graduate high school and then embark on your career as an addiction psychiatrist?
You know, I knew when I was in high school that I probably wanted to become a doctor. Didn't know how to go about doing it. I didn't really have anyone in my family who had ever been to college, so there was no one to really provide guidance. So I kind of figured it out on my own, ended up getting myself to Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, where I studied biochemistry. A lot of fun. And from there, I then went to the big city of New York. In the center of Manhattan, I was attending the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. Quite a culture shock, by the way, going from a small farm in northeastern Connecticut to the big city of New York. I was there for 4 years and then went over to the New York Presbyterian Hospital, Cornell Medical Center, to complete my residency in psychiatry. While there, while I was doing my residency, I was actually exposed to addiction for the first time. At the time, New York Hospital had a 28-day inpatient program. We thought back then, by the way, and that was 30 years ago, that the 28-day program could work. How naive were we? We certainly now recognize, based on medical research, that that's usually not effective treatment. Treatment must be much longer than 28 days. After completing that residency, I then went on to become certified in addiction psychiatry and then addiction medicine. And in fact, I was part of the first group of about 50 doctors in this country to be certified by the American Board of Addiction Medicine.
That is so inspiring to and to hear the background as far as and how you got involved with. We're going to be going to a short commercial break. As far as before we go to break, though, quick thought.
This is exciting work, Peter. And, you know, I wish more physicians were as excited as I am about treating addiction.
Excellent. We're going to be going to a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Moran. And as far as further about background, and we're going to be talking about some of the things as far as that are going on, as far as treatment and addiction as a brain disease. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Family Center for Recovery show. Find out more about the Family Center for Recovery on Facebook.com/Family Center for Recovery. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers don't. We'll be right back. The Family Center for Recovery in Lantana is the only treatment center in Florida owned and operated by a triple board certified psychiatrist. This means the Family Center for Recovery does treatment the right way. They treat substance abuse, depression, bipolar disorder, OCD, anxiety, teens and adults at all levels of inpatient care. Check out the innovative, life-changing treatment the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana has to offer at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school or even let alone go to college, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, studied hard, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I feel like if I didn't have anyone to push me, I wouldn't even bother to do it. I got one milestone down the drain, and now I got to work on the next. I see the future is really bright for me. I feel like it doesn't matter the age, as long as you go back and get it done. The high school diploma is just added to the confidence, and now I feel unstoppable.
No one gets a diploma alone. You have more support than you realize. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Family Center for Recovery radio show. If you wish to share this broadcast with a friend, you'll find the link at the Family Center for Recovery's website, FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
We are back. And if you just tuned in, you're listening to the Family Center for Recovery show. Your host, Peter Nathan. And with me in the studio today is Dr. Moran. Dr. Moran is the owner and medical director and CEO of Family Center for Recovery. We appreciate you listening to us. Thank you for making us a part of your Sunday afternoon, wherever that may be. If you're having a picnic, maybe doing some dishes around the house, thanks again. Dr. Moran, brain, and we're looking at as far as the study and addiction, and I know there's a lot involved with it, and you can maybe kind of go over for our listeners a little bit about it as far as what you know and how it affects addiction.
Oh, sure. You know, Peter, today we know that addiction is a brain disease. It's a psychiatric illness, not unlike many other psychiatric illnesses, the major ones being schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, major depressive disorder, bipolar disorder, severe personality disorders. Addiction is a very serious brain disease. We know that parts of the brain are responsible for certain functions. So, for example, we know what part of the brain is responsible for vision, for hearing, for smelling. Well, we also know the parts of the brain that are responsible for other functions, like judgment, or that capacity to predict the likely consequences of one's choices. If I do this, then this is likely to happen. That's judgment. Something called executive function, the ability to plan, carry out a sequence of events, think logically, impulse control, mood regulation, anxiety tolerance, motivation, memory, learning. These are all brain functions. And these are the functions that are directly impacted by this disease we call addiction. You know, when that person with a genetic vulnerability goes on to become exposed to a substance, he or she doesn't know that they are now on the path to developing the disease of addiction. What that person experiences is a compulsive drive to seek out and use that substance. Over time, the exposure to the substance brings about changes in those brain circuits, and so the result ends up being dysfunction in each of those circuits. That's truly the disease of addiction. In order to diagnose addiction, you have to be able to look at those individual functions and identify the dysfunction. My training tells me that it takes an addiction psychiatrist to be able to do that. That's how complex our understanding has become of such a serious illness.
The thing that I've been caught by is I know 12-step programs are very integral as far as treatment, and as part of our treatment as well. But for the most part, what really drew me to you, Dr. Moran, was is that, and I always kind of felt this way, was we're made up of chemicals. The brain, how does it react, and things along those lines. Something that people will ask me is they'll say, you know, somebody could take a pain med or painkiller, they could have one drink and doesn't do anything for, you know, doesn't do anything for them, they can just go about. And other people, they take that first painkiller or they take that first drink and something happens. Could you maybe enlighten or go over for our listeners as far as that concept and what's involved with something like that?
Sure. You know, studies show that not everybody who uses substances on a regular basis develops the disease of addiction. It turns out that our genes play about a 50% role, and our early environment plays about a 50% role. You know, what happens in the early environment in that individual who is exposed to something like severe neglect or some type of abuse, that actually affects the development of the brain from childhood forward and then creates this vulnerability such that when that individual becomes exposed to a substance, it brings about those changes in the brain that I referred to a little bit earlier. So, you know, as few as 9 or 10% of adults who smoke marijuana, for example, on a regular basis, go on to develop addiction. It's a little higher, more like about 15% for adolescents. But even with regard to opioids, some studies have shown that of those people who use opioids on a regular basis, about 45% go on to develop addiction. It's nowhere near 100%.
I know that there are a lot of people out there, and they're looking, they're turning, and they're trying to figure out, maybe they've looked at as 12-step programs, and they're finding, you know, it's just doesn't really work for you. So what we're really talking about as far as addiction, as far as the brain and how it's affected, and those are the areas that we have over at Family Center that we can explore and look into. Your thoughts as far as...
Well, I keep mentioning how complex a disease addiction is. You know, like all other areas of medicine, all other medical illnesses, we need to treat according to what the research studies show to be the most effective treatment. Well, we have a lot of research into what the most effective treatments for addiction should be. And generally, they include combinations of medicines and various types of psychotherapeutic interventions, cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectic behavior therapy, 12-step facilitation, motivation enhancement therapy, family systems, etc. The 12-step program should be a part of the overall treatment that's provided for a patient suffering from addiction. It should not be in place of treatment. That's a very naive view. We used to think that everybody should just attend programs, 12-step programs, that is, and they'll just work a recovery program and they'll be fine. But now we know that's very naive, that in fact, the vast majority of people suffering from addiction actually suffer from other psychiatric illnesses, mood disorders, psychotic disorders, anxiety disorders, PTSD, ADHD, severe personality disorders. If these other psychiatric illnesses are not recognized and treated aggressively, then the likelihood of being successful with the treatment of addiction is markedly reduced.
Something that we were talking about the other day, and we start to look at as far as the state of Florida and some things as far as licensure and DCF, and also looking at as far as women that might be expecting mothers that might need to detox as far as from opioid use. Your thoughts on some of the things that are going on in that respect?
Oh, this brings up lots of thoughts, actually, Peter. You know, it goes back to when I first decided to open my treatment program in 2010, I learned that it would be licensed by a social service agency, child welfare agency, DCF, rather than the Department of Health. This was shocking to me. I thought, what would a social service agency know about providing psychiatric treatment? Well, now we know that there's no physician involvement with DCF. So when DCF is auditing and ensuring that facilities are providing high-quality care, there's no physician involved. So how could they possibly be ensuring that proper psychiatric treatment is being provided to patients? Now, you know, I think that inadvertently this has led to the contribution of the state of Florida. Let me rephrase that. That the state of Florida may inadvertently be contributing to the opioid epidemic. You know, if you're not ensuring that facilities are providing evidence-based practice. And a perfect example of this is the treatment of opioid use disorder or opioid addiction. The studies clearly show that most people should remain on a maintenance medicine. A very effective one, probably the more effective one, is buprenorphine. You've heard the brand Suboxone or Subutex. Now, all of the studies show that people should remain on it for a long period of time. However, the most common treatment here in South Florida is to prescribe the medicine for about a week while in detox, tapering it off very quickly, and then transferring the patient to the next level of care. This leads to relapse rates of 90% within 3 months. I don't think we would accept that practice in any other field of medicine.
Extremely important point. And coming from somebody with a background and a knowledge, if you've just joined us, you've tuned in to the Family Center for Recovery show, your host, Peter Nathan, with me today in the studio, good friend of mine, the chief medical director, owner, and CEO of Family Center for Recovery, Dr. Robert A. Moran. Dr. Moran, continuing as we're talking about buprenorphine, that's a mouthful. One. But the point being is that proper care and having somebody who's has knowledge and the background, the education, enlighten us a little bit more, doctor, please.
You know, Peter, I often tell my students and also families of our patients that I can't think of a single medical illness that we treat today the way we treated when I was in medical school 30 years ago. That's a result of ongoing medical research showing more effective treatments, or even treatments that we should not do. We need to base everything we do in the field of medicine upon research. And certainly in our facility, we talk about that all the time. Being an educational facility, a teaching facility, we talk about what the evidence is. What is the medical evidence for that supports this particular intervention versus this particular intervention? You know, I was thinking about this the other day when I was listening to the sad news about Senator John McCain being diagnosed with a glioblastoma, a brain tumor. And there was an interview with the neurosurgeon, and I was curious as to what the treatment would be for Senator McCain. He had the surgery, and the neurosurgeon pointed out that he is about to start radiation therapy and then chemotherapy. On what basis does the neurosurgeon recommend that treatment? Medical research. And that is exactly what we should be doing in the field of addiction. We know what is effective. We know the medicines that can markedly decrease craving for opioids, alcohol. In fact, the studies are so overwhelmingly positive with using certain medicines for decreasing craving in alcohol that some doctors have said not to offer it to our patients is akin to malpractice. Mm. You know, there was a study done, actually it was a survey that was administered to a number of the more than 14,000 treatment programs across the United States, actually asking the addiction professionals with various degrees, but all non-physicians, they're actually in the front lines treating addiction, including nicotine use disorder. And they were asked about the effective medicines that are available to decrease craving for nicotine. And the large majority of those individuals asked that question could not answer the question. I think that's very sad. When a person who's supposed to be an expert in providing treatment for addiction doesn't know that we have medicines that can decrease craving for nicotine.
The fact that there is that and it is available, the research says we're continuing going forward. That's the thing that's enlightening, to know that there are some, that it's available. It's now it's just getting into the proper hands and for people to learn more. The future, what are some things you maybe see for the future as far as research and things that people might be able to kind of open their eyes and see what might the brighter tomorrow might look like for them?
Well, you know, one of the things that's absolutely fascinating to me is the functional MRI. You know, people have heard of MRIs and they take pictures of the brain, but the functional MRI actually shows activity. When I give my lectures at our family weekends, I show many scans where we can see in the individual suffering from addiction the parts of the brain that are not functioning in a healthy way. It just tells me that sometime in the future, when they become much less expensive, we're going to be able to use them routinely to help us to recognize response to treatment.
We're going to be going to a short commercial break. We're listening, and Dr. Moran is our guest today. in the studio. We're talking about, as far as the medical perspective and understanding that, yes, there is research. There are things that are available and things for the future, so which gives us hope. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us.
The Family Center for Recovery is the only facility in Florida owned and operated by an addiction psychiatrist, Dr. Robert Moran, and he's dedicated his life to helping the people no one else will. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
At the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana, they treat little problems before they become big problems. Unfortunately, 98% of treatment centers won't treat teens because they think it's too difficult or not profitable enough. Whether your teen is struggling with behavior issues, substance abuse, or mental illness, they believe every kid deserves a chance. Contact Family Center for Recovery or go to FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Family Center for Recovery. Before little problems become big problems.
As an 18-year-old, I let my mistakes kind of take over my life. I was 0.5 credits away from completing high school, and I didn't do it.
10 years later, at age 28, Jackie finished her high school diploma.
When I found out that I was pregnant, I know that I had to do something for myself if I wanted to make her a better person and provide a better life for her. My family never stopped pushing for me to be better because they knew what I could become and who I could become as a person. My support team is amazing. The educational director, my sister, and even my 7-year-old daughter has just been more than the support that I could ask for. I've been given an opportunity, and I'm just thankful for it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is the Family Center for Recovery Show. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that other centers don't, including teens, expectant mothers, patients with mental health issues, or needing a medical detox. Call 855-202-4220.
We are back. Thank you for joining us, the Family Center for Recovery Show. Your host, Peter Nathan, with me today in the studio, the owner, medical director, and CEO of Family Center for Recovery, Dr. Robert A. Moran. This section, we're going to go over some things that I know are very near and dear to Dr. Moran. There's a few different topics we're going to go over. Which one would you like to go over first, Doctor?
Oh, I'm excited to talk about our family weekend.
Excellent. So,
you know, we recognized quite a while ago, Peter, that all the major psychiatric illnesses are really family illnesses. The onset of these illnesses is generally sometime between mid to late adolescence, a time where developmentally we need to be, well, we actually have a lot going on in our brains, a lot of complicated processes that should be occurring. But if we are unlucky enough to have certain genes that set into play the onset of these illnesses, then that adversely affects our ability to become healthy young adults. So we see the onset of these illnesses at that time. And what happens is that often the families are attempting to help their loved ones cope with these illnesses, but unintentionally, inadvertently, end up enabling the maintenance of these illnesses and preventing the further development, the further neurodevelopment into young adulthood. So when they come to us, we see that the loved one or the patient is stuck, no longer developing in a healthy way. So we see our job as helping that individual to become asymptomatic of their illnesses and get back on that life trajectory to become independent, responsible adults. That's the overall overarching design that we're helping the patient to achieve. So, of course, we need the families. We need their involvement. We need to understand the dynamics that have evolved and that are inadvertently contributing to the maintenance of the illness and help them to recognize what their role should be as the families, you know, providing the emotional support that they truly want to provide. In order to do that, we invite them in for a three-day weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we have these weekends every other month. they are exhausting for everyone. And the families will tell you that sometimes are actually life-changing. It begins with education. Families sit with me, and I provide what has grown into an 8-hour lecture, actually helping them to become what I call experts in psychiatry. I teach them all about the brain and what we know about in terms of its function and what can go wrong and how the dysfunction actually evolves into the individual psychiatric illnesses. It's my hope that by doing this, they begin to recognize not only how complex these diseases are, but how our treatment interventions that they will then begin to learn about will be understandable to them. So we talk about various medicines, for example. We talk about all of the psychotherapeutic interventions. We talk about the rationale for why we do what we do in our particular program so they can understand absolutely everything going forward. To have an opportunity to ask all kinds of questions, and I'm willing to stay there all night long in order to educate. So then the next day, they experience what we call a community meeting. It's something that we provide in our program every single day of the week. I lead the community meeting 5 days a week, and it has evolved into something that actually has become the hub of our treatment program. It's teaching the patients what it really means to be part of something larger than themselves. You see, a lot of the illnesses really drive what we call pathologic narcissism. You know, it's that kind of self-involvement, that self-centeredness, and the complete lack of regard for how one's behaviors and choices affect those around him or her. And so part of the goal for community is to enlighten the patient and certainly now the families during family weekend. It also gives us an opportunity to really look at the family dynamics in action when we're talking about what's going on with the patient, talking about what's going on with the family. Everybody learns and is usually riveted by what's happening in the process of community. Later on, during the day, they receive various presentations of other aspects of our program, like our transitional living program and what the level system is all about and various aspects of care so that they can be fully enlightened as to what we do. And then I meet with the families again on Sunday. And we typically meet for a minimum of 5 hours. And it's an opportunity for them to see how everything they've learned so far actually applies to their loved one and their family and their family relationships, so that they know going forward that they're on a new path of learning how to provide that emotional support and what their role is going forward. And then, of course, we end on a lighter note because everyone has an opportunity to participate at our family barbecue.
It's a nice way to wrap up the weekend. You join us, this Family Center for Recovery show, your host, Peter Nathan, with me in the studio today, Dr. Moran. He's the owner, medical director, and CEO of Family Center for Recovery. One of the things that really struck me as far as when I first came in contact with Dr. Moran and community was as far as patients and the interaction. And a lot of times it can be very isolating addiction, but to see the other patients interacting with Dr. Moran and amongst themselves along with the clinicians, learning valuable social skills and how to mend and become and have a better life. Your thoughts, Doctor?
Yes, Peter. You know, we've known for a few decades, actually, in psychiatry, how powerful group therapy can be. And in some cases, the modality of choice at a particular time in one's treatment. There are certain illnesses, certain major psychiatric illnesses, where individual therapy isn't as effective as group psychotherapy, especially when individuals are very symptomatic and unreliable. So let me explain for a moment. Some of the psychiatric syndromes, such as schizophrenia or bipolar 1 disorder, when the individual is manic, or the severe personality disorders, or addiction, drives what we call sociopathy. You know, that's the disregard for rules, the exploitation of others, the lying, cheating, stealing, deceitfulness. Many of our families whose loved ones suffer from addiction are very familiar with these types of behaviors. It's always important to recognize the degree of sociopathy and to address it head on. It actually must be the top priority at all times. It's very easy for someone to come into my office and for me to meet with them individually and for me to be manipulated by that person. However, it's much more difficult for an entire group of people to be manipulated by an individual. And so we take advantage of that group process, and we really focus on that for addressing the sociopathy that is inevitable when dealing with the major psychiatric syndromes. In addition, we're able to recognize how individuals hold each other accountable when they become part of a group, and when they feel that someone else's behaviors will affect them. And so they're looking out for others, and everyone is really putting the effort into the entire community getting healthier over time. And certainly that's what we see as our patients progress from the higher level of care, where there's much more structure and very little opportunity to make their own choices, such as residential. And then they progress to the partial hospital program and intensive outpatient program and then outpatient program. They're getting healthier, and the type of community or even the type of people they want to associate with becomes healthier over time. Associated with this, Peter, is the whole idea of the continuum of care. You know, I don't think that it's very effective for there to be a single component of care. So, for example, in the state of Florida, it's possible to have an individual program licensed, such as an inpatient detox or a PHP or an IOP. In fact, of the more than 1,500 licensed programs in the state of Florida, the vast majority are IOPs. So, you know, it makes me wonder how somebody determining whether an individual should be admitted to an IOP, and at one point is it determined that that patient should be discharged from that IOP, and to where? You know, for me, it's like licensing an operating room without a recovery room. I think if we're going to provide comprehensive care for these very severe illnesses, we need to insist upon a continuum of care. Instead of just being able to license a PHP, in my opinion, Florida should say you're going to have to get every single program licensed and have every single program part of the continuum of care. This enables, for example, the individual not only to progress from residential to PHP to IOP to OP, but if at any point, and it frequently happens, we see evidence of regression, then it's important to provide a higher level of care. And it's very sad to see that the most common practice here in Florida, when an individual is in a program and relapses, that individual is most commonly kicked out of the program. That makes no sense to me. That's like, you know, admitting someone with pneumonia into the hospital, and then when they develop a fever, you kick them out. It's a symptom of the illness, and you recognize that relapse is a symptom of the illness and provide the appropriate psychotherapeutic intervention, more structure generally, but you're able to do that if you have the entire continuum of care very easily, very readily, and it's the same staff involved throughout the entire process, continuity of care.
From somebody who was outside looking in, and I have family members and friends that have been involved in treatments and other states and other programs, but the thing that was available was that continuum of care. And when the state of Florida, like we're talking now, didn't make any sense to me if somebody originally starts a program and now they're going to be shipped somewhere else or go somewhere else. There's a relationship that's been already built and things along those lines, and now you're at a very vulnerable point in your life, and now you're being handed off to somebody else. That's the thing that I really like about our program, is that you have hands-on right from the beginning through the continuum of care. Something that was very interesting to me was, as part of the program, may seem real simple to the outside person, but doing grocery shopping. Here you have $60, and you can go buy ooh, whatever you like. Tell me a little bit more about that. That was very interesting when I first heard about it.
Well, you know, I explain to the patients when they first come in that we design the program in such a way that we identify the dysfunction in their brain as completely as we can, and then we provide the appropriate interventions, combinations of medicine and psychotherapies, in order to help those parts of the brain respond to treatment and improve. At the residential level of care, it's 24-hour medical supervision, and we are providing all of the meals. So we're essentially making the decisions for the most part, unless there are special requirements that the patient may need. It's at the level of intensive outpatient, at a partial hospital program, where now they have an opportunity to exercise choice. They go into a grocery store and they're choosing what to purchase and what to plan for meals, three meals a day, 7 days a week. And we actually get to see this process of that kind of decision making, how they're exercising their judgment, their impulse control as they're walking down the aisle, for example, that has all the wine bottles on the shelves. So we are actually examining how their brain function is responding to treatment by something as simple as purchasing groceries.
With that, we will be right back. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back soon.
Like the Family Center for Recovery on Facebook to learn more about their mental health service and Addiction Resources Center. Located in Lantana, Florida, the Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers can't. Call anytime, 855-202-4220. We'll be right back.
The Family Center for Recovery in Lantana is the only treatment center in Florida owned and operated by a triple board certified psychiatrist. This means the Family Center for Recovery does treatment the right way. They treat substance abuse, depression, bipolar disorder, OCD, anxiety, teens and adults at all levels of inpatient care. Check out the innovative, life-changing treatment the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana has to offer at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Music is a bridge between the material and the spiritual. My name is Harvey Lauer, and I'm 82. As a blind person, you have to be aware that nobody can tell you what you can or can't do. You really have to try things. My folks got me a little radio in 1940, and that was the best Christmas present I ever got. When I was 11 years old is when I started to play music, play the piano, and then the accordion, and then the cello. My wife, who was also blind, was a good cook. When she died, that's when I started Meals on Wheels. America, let's do lunch.
One in six seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at americaletsdolunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Family Center for Recovery radio show. If you wish to share this broadcast with a friend, you'll find the link at the Family Center for Recovery's website, FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
We are back. Thank you for making us a part of your Sunday afternoon. You've tuned in to the Family Center for Recovery show. Your host, Peter Nathan, with me today, very special guest, Dr. Robert A. Moran, who's the owner and medical director and CEO of Family Center for Recovery. There is somebody that the person, a loved one, contacts, and they have all the questions about the care, and this is my loved one, and or it could be that person themselves. There's a very special somebody that answers the phone, talks with these people on a regular basis. She's been with you for a while. It's Melissa. Could you go over Melissa and her background and what she means to you?
Oh, my Melissa Tabor. I don't know what I would do without her. She's contributed so much to the overall functioning of Family Center for Recovery. She is usually the first contact that any family member or potential patient has when they call in. And she has the patience of a saint. I have listened, actually, to some of the recorded calls. And the way she handles the questions that family members ask, you know, it's incredible. I tell her this funny story that I used to take the calls. And there was one particular call where a mother had called in, and she was asking questions about our treatment facility. She was interested in finding a place for her adolescent son. And she was asking if we provided yoga. She asked how often her son would go to the beach. She asked if we would provide equine therapy. I started explaining to her that she needed to understand what she should be looking at in the program to take her son into. And I told her which questions she should be asking. And she didn't really like my approach, so she ended up hanging up. So I talked with Melissa about it. And Melissa says, oh, Dr. Moran, you don't know how to do it. You just don't know how to answer these questions in a way that the families are prepared to listen to your answers. She said, let me take over. And she did, and she just does a wonderful job.
It's an art. And I've got to know Melissa and being able to talk with family members, especially the very vulnerable and somebody who means so much to that person and being able to have the right things to say. And Melissa, she is a true professional at what she does in that area. We look at our courts, we look at our jails, prisons, and things along those lines. We talked the other day a little bit about as far as people that are in jail and your thoughts as far as our prison system and people that are in jails that need some sort of treatment, whether it's substance use disorder or mental illness. Your thoughts, doctor?
You know, as I mentioned earlier, the major psychiatric illnesses, the psychotic disorders, the bipolar 1 disorder, the severe personality disorders, and addiction drive sociopathy. You know, these people break the laws. Unfortunately, they're being driven by a brain that is not working in a healthy way. That individual, for example, who suffers from addiction, has this compulsive drive. He or she is not making a choice, not making a decision. We know the parts of the brain that are responsible for making decisions, and we see on the functional MRIs how those parts are dysfunctional. That individual is being driven to procure and use a substance, not thinking about what the likely consequences are going to be, because that part of the brain is not lighting up either. We need to recognize that addiction, as well as the other psychiatric illnesses, are true medical illnesses that need psychiatric interventions rather than jail cells.
I think you mentioned to me the other day, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we talked about addiction, and we talked about as far as treating that addiction. If we treat that, the bad things go away.
Well, so what I teach our students and also our patients is that when someone first comes in and we elicit this history of all of the sociopathic behavior, the first thing we have to do is identify whether this is an individual whose addiction is causing the sociopathy, or is this person suffering from addiction and the severe personality disorder we call antisocial personality disorder. Unfortunately, psychiatry does not have an effective treatment for that. There's nothing we can do. In fact, when I have diagnosed that in an individual in our facility, I've had to explain to him, and usually it is a male, that we have no effective treatment, and so there's no reason for you to come into our facility. That person will inevitably end up in jail. However, the person whose addiction is causing the sociopathy, if we treat the addiction aggressively and effectively, the sociopathy just melts away.
Seems like a much more humanitarian view and way to work with people as far as versus incarceration and locking somebody up long term and recognizing that there is a solution, there is an answer that we could do something about. The future. Goals. I know that the facility, the campus, and I think you mentioned there's actually not 60 to 65 employees, so like 679. So growth. And what are some of your hopes and dreams that you see with Family Center and your aspirations as a professional going forward?
Well, certainly I look forward to us expanding our campus, expanding our programs. You know, we have an adolescent program I mentioned in addition to all of the adult programs. We treat all psychiatric illness. So my vision is to actually see individual departments. So we have departments that are focusing on various illnesses. Right now, we have a great system in which everyone is treated similarly to the extent that they have major psychiatric illnesses, and we might be treating somebody with schizophrenia along with somebody with addiction, along with somebody with a severe personality disorder. We might move toward actually focusing on individual departments of personality disorder treatment, for example, where this would then lead us to an opportunity to do more research, and because research is something that we're just beginning to get interested in.
we're getting ready to wrap up. And before we wrap up, I just want to thank you both personally and professionally as far as being a part of Family Center and being a part of your vision. I know there's tremendous devotion as far as from your other employees. Dr. Moran, a heartfelt thank you. Final thoughts?
It's a great pleasure to be here, Peter. And thank you so much for doing this for Family Center for Recovery, actually. I greatly appreciate it.
And with that, we're signing off. Thanks again. Look forward to having you again next week as far as listeners. Thanks again for listening to us.
This has been the Family Center for Recovery radio show. To learn more about the center or to send a link of the show, visit fcfrmd.com. That's fcfrmd.com. Join us next Sunday at noon for the Family Center for Recovery show. Phenomena is back. Our 2017 iHeartRadio Music Festival.